So, how does that relate to Lord Jagannath? Yes, and? Yeah, Yadavaya. So who is Jagannath? Yeah, where does he live? Yeah, he's Yadavaya, because he's living amongst the Yadus in Dwarka. Hari Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya. So, Jagannath. Okay. This is the Anjanis with the Academy explanation. They figured it out. Hari Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Yadavaya Madhavaya Keshavaya. Gopal Govinda Ram, Srimadhi Sudan. Now, how does that refer to Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra? This is Vishnu Chakravarti. Gopal Govinda Ram, Srimadhi Sudan. This is how the monkeys make. Chimpanzees do this. Yeah. Gopal Govinda, Krishna. Yeah. How could you interpret that? Sri Madhusudana. Yeah. I guess so. Yeah. Sri Madhusudana. But in Sanskrit, it's kind of precise, probably written. Yeah. Anyway, think of that one. Yeah. And then, maybe I'll do that. Giridhari Gopinath, Radhanath Mohan. Like that. God. Subhadra is Shakti. Yeah? Because there's Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, his expansion, Prakash in Sanskrit. Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Holy Do. Vande Guru Isha Bhaktan Isha Isha Avatarakan Tat Prakasham Shtak Shakti. It's the second verse, or first verse, of which you might charge from the Panchatattva. So it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Right? In his prakash, or expansion, is Balaram, or Nityananda, or Jesus Christ, or whatever. And then his shakti, or sorry, avatar, tattva, is Advaita, Mahavishnu, Paramaya, Shirdakshay Vishnu, all that. This is all avatar tattva. So Balaram is not an incarnation, he's an expansion. And so all, simultaneously then all the other shaktis go along with it. So then Lakshmi, I would say, is an expansion of Radharani, and Subhadra is a Shakti of Radharani. Yeah. And when you're good, she's the internal potency. When you're bad, she's the external potency. You know, when you want to have materialistic consciousness, on the Krishna book there's this big list of Mamba Ma, you know, Santoshi Ma, always a big list of all these different Durga forms. So she's kind of tricky because she can go both ways. She can be Yoga Maya and she can be Maha Maya. Yeah, like that. Yeah. Okay?
Shakti. Radharani Shakti is.
Yeah. Shakti Shakti. Shakti Ki Shakti.
Expansion is Lakshmi.
Yeah. That is the Prakash. And then the incarnations deal with the material world. So Durga doesn't exist in the spiritual world. Yeah, it's very, very technical now. As far as I understand, in the Brahma Samhita and so on, in Vaikuntha, there's one Vaikuntha deity, Sadashiva, okay, with Sada Lakshmi or something like that. So when the material world is manifest, like when the mirror is there, right, they position themselves in the mirror so the living entities can see them, you know, like that, and relate to them. So that reflection is Shiva and Parvati, Bhairava, Kali Bhairava, depending how much the mirror is distorted. You know, Shiva and Parvati in goodness, Kali and Bhairava in ignorance. You know. So when there's no material world, no mirror, there's no Kali and Bhairava. Right? And they never did exist, really. You see? The same with the Paramatma does not exist in the spiritual world. Neither does Shirdakshay Vishnu and Garbhadakshay Vishnu don't exist in the spiritual world. But Mahavishnu does. right? Yeah. So, and is the material energy, does it exist in the spiritual world? Panditji?
Everything in spiritual world is spiritual.
Yeah.
How can it be material?
Okay. It does. Yeah. As pradhan. Okay. What is this? Huh? In Spanish. Puñado. Yeah. In Hindi? Panja. So you see in Spanish, puñado. In Hindi, panja. Punja. This is why in Thai Gorsham is going through such the same as, that's the same as, you know. Yeah. Joven is youth in Spanish, and Joven. So if you speak Hindi and English, high class English, Latinized English, you start going through the Spanish, it's like every third word you recognize. It's like, because the Arabs conquered Spain and they conquered India. So many Spanish words are Arab based, and so many Hindi words. I bet you this is not Punja in Sanskrit. It's probably coming from the Arab source. But where is it now? Where is my fist now? Does it exist? You have this in philosophy? You have this, discussed this? Yeah. So what's the answer? It's a big philosophical question. Analogy.
It's like, yes, huh? It's
yeah, or non-manifested form. Non-manifested form. So pradhan is the non-manifested form of? Huh? Pradhan. Pradhan is the non-manifested form of prakriti. Yeah, like that. So so the pradhan is always there with Mahavishnu. But it's there. Material world is, energy is there in the spiritual world. That's why it says it's eternal. The introduction to the Bhagavad Gita says it's eternal. But it's not manifested like that. It's very quiet like that. You know? Like for example, in the material world, in Vrindavan, there are demons. But in Gokula, Goloka, in Gokula, right? But in Goloka, in the spiritual world, there are only rumors of demons. Yeah, like that. Yeah. In the material world, the gopis have husbands. In the spiritual world, they only think they have husbands, but they never quite show up. It's like, I'm married, but my husband never quite shows up. There are demons, but they never quite show up. So the material world is like non-manifest in the spiritual world. Yeah. Yeah? So very good. This is the way it is. Yeah.
You said there's no Paramatma in the spiritual world. So yeah. I remember reading that, but also in one place, yeah. Prabhupada, that Krishna is the bigger, he's the biggest among the big, and he's the smallest among the small.
Mm-hmm.
And the analogy, example he gives is Krishna is so small that he enters into the spirit soul.
I don't know the details, you know, but it says something about, you know, upon coming out of the material world, he enters into the Bhamajyoti and that and stuff. You know. So yeah, details. Normally he enters into the heart. But he's in everybody's heart too, so maybe he's there also in spiritual in a different form like that. But probably not Avatar Tattva. You know, also Subhadra is also there in the spiritual world, but she's no longer Avatar Shakti.
In Sri Sampradaya, they actually have a division in the Sampradaya on this concept of whether super soul exists inside the individual soul or by the side of the individual soul.
Yeah.
And just on that concept, they were acharyas having two different opinions and they have a branch.
Because in the when Nala Kovera and Mani Griva is discussing that, he goes in and discusses how I like America because my family is American. I like my family because I'm a member of my family. Other family, not a member. You know? And then there's bodily connection to this family. And my body, I like my body because I'm in the body. Right? Now I like myself because I'm part and parcel of Krishna. You know? So ultimately, only Krishna is dear. So in that respect, yeah, then, you know, the essence of the Atma, the Paramatma, super excellent quality of the Atma is Krishna. Yeah. Okay. Where is the corner of the room? Huh? Where? Point to the corner of the room. Okay. How big is it? Yeah. So is it something separate? Bring it over here. Bring me the corner of the room. No, it's a part of the room. It has no definition. That's a nice psychology. Part of the room. But it's not the whole room. It's a portion. It's a parcel. Another one is the middle of the rope. It's a very understandable concept. Well, how big is the middle of the rope? Yeah. So it's a part of the rope. You can't separate it. No, what is it? This is the middle of the rope. It has no meaning without being a part, right? But at the same time, too, it's not the same as the rope. It's a very nice thing of a chinta beta, beta beta. But okay, this is all ontology, right? Right? The ultimate nature of things. Before that, we have to come to epistemology. So you talk about it. Just light on, maybe? Getting dark very quickly. Okay. So first is what is epistemology? Do you know?
I think I've read it in your
Huh?
I read it in my email that you sent.
Yeah.
I think it's a study of philosophy or something like that.
Your life is one third wasted. Yeah. Epistemology is how do you know? How do you know? Episteme means ground or basis. If that's the one. Episteme. How do you know? And what is ontology? My dear boatman. Ontology means what you can know. But like very fundamentally, things that just don't change. I mean, you have to be sought. And what is the ultimate nature of things? And then praxeology. Epistemology is how you know. Ontology is what you know. And praxeology is how you practice it. This is from Bishop Chrysostomos? Nomopoulos Margagorius. See, in Greek Orthodox tradition, we divide philosophy into three areas. How do you know? What do you know? And what do you do about it? Like that. Okay, your life is 2-3/4 wasted. Can you swim? Okay. Basically, you get dropped in the water, just take a deep breath and relax, and you'll come up. That's the first thing they teach you when you're swimming, little children. Take a deep breath and just relax, and you'll come up. You see, and then move your arms like this, and yeah, okay, then you'll stay afloat at least like that. Okay, just learn something very valuable in this class. Yeah. But if you panic, then you're in trouble. Just take a deep breath before you're going down. You'll see you go down, but you come back up. And you can push the water a little bit to let the air out, get around. And you can start pulling yourself. Very simple. Okay, so where is our epistemology discussed? Our Gaudiya Vaishnava epistemology?
Yeah, it's discussed in the Shatsandarbhas of Deep Goswami.
Yeah.
Especially in the first one.
Yeah. Any other specific treatises in our tradition? I mean, it's everywhere. Everywhere it's talking about these things. Bhagavad Gita again and again. Krishna's Shrinu. What chapter is that? First verse in one chapter. Yeah, what chapter is that? Just hear from me. It's a later chapter. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so just hear from me. Yeah. And I will now explain to you. He's here for me, this more confidential knowledge. Yeah. So Prabhupada says, very significant. This is how we understand. Yeah. So it's explained many, many places like that. But in terms of a separate focus, do they study it this way in Vedic culture? What's the word?
It's
pramana, which means literally.
It comes from ma, which means to measure.
Oh, okay.
So pramana is kind of the measuring stick. How you know the means of getting valid knowledge is usually how you translate. How do you reach valid knowledge?
Okay.
In other words, how do you know what you know?
So then pra is a dhatu?
Yeah, pra is the prefix.
But is it a dhatu?
Ma is the dhatu.
So pra is also a dhatu?
Mm-hmm.
No?
I mean, someone may divide it like that, but usually it's
mind.
But what does pra mean? Kadosha, pranya.
It means
put forward?
Yes, forward.
Okay.
Yeah. Or sometimes it can mean complete or intensified.
Okay.
Intensified.
Yeah.
Matta.
Yeah. I hope this is, yeah, when you start arguing with these philosophers. Yes, because they really want, like, go as far down as they can, you know, by logic. Okay, pramana. Yeah. Okay. So it means to know how to get knowledge.
The means of knowledge. And then pramaya is the object of knowledge.
Okay, so in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also discusses this in chapter 13. Jnana, te jnana. Jnana, jnaya, there's knowledge, knower, and the object of knowledge, and the means of knowledge. Jnana, jnaya, jnana, there it is. Yeah? There? It's the same thing, right? What is the difference between jnana and pramana?
Well, I was just reading about this.
Okay.
Just this afternoon.
There you go.
Jnana and pramana. The way this one author was explaining it, based on Indian philosophy, is that pramana is a specific form of jnana. So jnana can mean any kind of cognitive knowledge or cognition.
Okay.
Whereas prama is kind of the valid knowledge, or means of valid knowledge. So it's measured knowledge. It's knowledge that can be
scientific knowledge?
Perhaps. Yeah.
Okay. And then prajna?
Prajna is the same. It's the jnana is there, the jnana. But then
in the Prague,
pra
into
has the,
yeah.
Intuitive knowledge.
Huh? To become a Shankaracharya, you have to become expert at all these things, right? That's the idea. Just by understanding grammar and stuff perfectly, you'll understand this material world and it'll cease to exist. That's their idea, basically. Yeah. So to be, you know, you have to become very great Sanskritist to be a, you know, in their tradition. But I can see how you can become lost in this. It's like, you know, you can really, what's it go, Bhajagovind, all you software engineers, you know, all your endless do loops and conditional if statements will not save you at the time of death. But Yamaraj, if that, same thing. If the court, you know, Bill Gates is hiring thousands of Sanskritists in his court to, you know, establish all these systems. So, Bhagavad Gita, that one chapter, so chapter 13, knower, enjoyer, and consciousness. Yeah, because there it's kind of confusing, because there's knowledge, there's the object of knowledge. That means the purpose of knowledge.
That which is known.
Yeah. But that would seem to be, what is the difference between knowledge and that which is known? There's knowledge, the object of knowledge, the process of knowledge, and the knower. The process of knowledge and the knower is clear. And the object of, what is the difference between knowledge and the object of knowledge?
Well, in a realist system, the object of knowledge exists independent of whether or not the person knows it.
Okay.
So the knowledge is the actual, it's not,
yeah.
I mean, the knowledge doesn't create
okay.
the object, so the
okay.
object exists separately from the knowledge. Now, where the knowledge exists, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
If it's a mental condition.
Because there's something else, which is the purpose of knowledge. That could be the object of knowledge.
Yeah.
Could be the purpose.
Name.
Yeah.
Name is the object of knowledge. My dear Krishna, I wish to know about the fifth position and the field, the knower of the field, and the knower of the field. And knowledge.
So what are the four Sanskrit terms? Yeah. Is this okay? We discuss these things? Yeah. We're doing this because we have in Peru, we're having this Bharatiya Sanskriti, our third thing. So We're NEOS. I was just talking to the director of NEOS, Sir Nathagorasundra, who's in Tennessee, a psychiatrist from Lucknow. And so North American Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies, we started. It's a nonprofit educational corporation. So it's not religious. And so with that, we started in 2004. So our first kind of like relationship really is with San Marcos University, which is the oldest university in the Western world, along with the University of Mexico City, 450 years old. And Dora Bassan, she's a professor there. She has 5 doctorates. Her Carmi name is Dora Bassan Montenegro de Devoto. Her name is Devoto, her husband's name. And so anyway, she was in India, met Dr. Bandapajaya. He's so proud of the Asiatic Society, you know, because it's the oldest institution in India, the educational institution in India. You know, and that's like, I don't know, 1790 or something like that. It's like 200 years old, 190 years old, like that. You know. And he said, this is the oldest institution in India, educational institution in India. And I said, well, San Marcos is the oldest in South America, isn't it? And he said, yes, it's 450 years old. it was like, you know, some smaller dog, some guys is a bigger dog. It's like, there's a lot. You know. It's very old. You know, 450 years in the university. And it has about, I think it's 40,000 students. It's internationally famous in law, medicine, and political science. It's very popular. Other areas too, but those are really like international, you know, famous. We have an agreement with it. We started off with the Department of Philosophy, then they increased it to the School of Humanities, and they increased it to the entire university. So our agreement is with the university, it's not with a single department like that. And to present a festival of classical Indian culture. Like that. So everything, ladies' fashion show, food, drama, music, political science, Ayurveda, all these things we presented like that for 2 years. They're very tough, oof, a lot of work. But they're very pleased. You know, the bigger, everybody except for the vice chancellor, the rector, came to the programs and saw what was going on like that. You know, the head of the school, head of the department, and they were all like. One of them, for example, commented. The boy said about 20 years ago, we had a very strong, you know, thing in Oriental philosophy and culture in San Marcos, but somehow the 4 professors all retired within 5 years, and that was the end of it. We haven't had anything for like so many years. We're very pleased that our Department of Philosophy is starting to develop these things again, and hopefully it will continue. Because yes, there's a lot of benefit between, you know, South America, and the cultures are so like sympathetic. If you take a picture of downtown Lima, you cannot tell the people, the dress, the complexions. Right, you were there. Everybody was thinking you were like, you know, a Latin guy who had given up his culture, yeah, or something like that. No, it is. Yeah, because it looks just the same. You know, in terms of like, you know, being careful of thieves and robbers and falling in holes in the sidewalk, it's just the same as India. You know? The way people live and have servants in the house, it's like India. And, you know, take care of them. They know. You know, so similar. So this year is our last year. We're really kind of concentrating things down. We've learned, like, forget, we can't do 1 week, and you know, we're just going to do a few days and. Particular things. If anybody else wants to do something, we'll help. We have things. And so on Friday, we're going to do epistemology. Because, you know, down there, it's actually a very hot topic. We have a lot of people discussing it. Like that. And especially, we're working with the National Science Council, CONCETEC, Consejeros en Ciencia y Tecnología. Right? It's a private corporation, but it's like the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve Bank is not a government organization, but it is. Yeah. So the CONCETEC is private, but it's basically the National, you know, Science Council. And they determine the curriculum in science education, from, you know, from kindergarten to PhD. They decide what it's going to be. And also they're in charge of distributing a lot of the money, which makes their decisions like hold weight. And so we had like very good response with them. It's basically like it's the American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS. You know, to be able to, we put presentations in our center, and they've said this, we've never let anybody religious ever present it before. And they were very impressed with Sankhya, that it explains everything, the whole thing. Because down there they have constant contact with ghosts, you know, dwarfs, all these things. I wanted to tell you one day, I was talking one time about, maybe 1 year after I was there, like about 9 years ago. And Divyavani, the Lord of the Son, Divyavoto, had arranged like maybe 6, 8, like, you know, scientists and stuff, and they were all educated in Sorbonne, in Paris, and you know, Stanford. You know, they all like study outside of the country, but they're all Peruvians. So I was talking about Sankhya and all these things, and they were kind of like, you know, yeah, we used to believe in these things, but we have to go into the modern world and give up all these things with mysticism and shamans and the magic and stuff. So right in downtown, you see it? If you saw it or not. Right in downtown Lima, near the Sheraton Hotel and all these big modern things, our center's not far from there. There's one like building, and it's a typical downtown building with a cigar shop and a, you know, and a lunch counter restaurant, you know, all this kind of just simple downtown stuff. But the second store, all the windows are broken out, there's nothing there, you know, then it's called Casa, which means house, Matusita, like that. And it's the most famous ghost house probably in the whole country. About, I don't know, many years ago now, some years ago, one reporter, the same thing, said, we modern people don't believe in ghosts. You know, I'm going to pass the whole night there and you'll see nothing will happen. You know. Next morning, he didn't come out. They came and took him out and took him straight to the mental hospital. He was completely, I think he recovered, but he was completely, you know, gone. You know. So I was talking to these guys and they're like, you know, they were kind of sarcastic looks and everything. So out of like a little irritation, so I said, okay, how many of you would spend one night in Casa Matusita? Like that. So all were smiling and kind of going like, you've got us, yeah. We think we're modern people, but when you put it that way, blah, blah, we're not going to, we have enough experience with these things that we know that, yeah, they exist. You put it that way, at least there's a good, you know, good chance of stuff like that. So it's different down there. It's kind of like once you have this experience with you. Right now, we have this experience with these things. So talking about Sankhya like that, you know, which is ontology. But now we're going back to epistemology. Because, so what do we have before epistemology? How do you know as epistemology? But what comes before that? Right? What comes before how do you know? What's a more basic philosophical question than how do you know? I know. Well, how do you know? It's more basic, right? Yeah. Why do you know? Right? Yeah? Bhakti. Right? Where does Gyan come from? No. Who's Gyan's mother? Who's the mother of Gyana? And who's the brother of Gyana? Huh? Gyana has a brother and he has a mother. Who has two twin sons? Jnana and Vairagya come from? Yeah, right. Where's that from? Yeah. In the first canto. The story. Huh? Yeah, Bhagavan Mahatma. Narada Muni saw that a very beautiful girl with two old men, little old men. And he asked her, who are these little old men? Oh, there's my children, you know, Jnana and Vairagya. Yeah, Vairagya. Yeah, same thing. And they become very, very old and decrepit because of Kali Yuga, like that. So Narada Muni trying to find how to revive them and make them young again. This is something they don't because science is gyan. Cien means to know. Siere, that's the Latin word siere. Conscience, a common knowledge, like that. Nescience, no knowledge. So basically, our predominating philosophical idea in the world is a Gyan tradition. Yeah. So you ask, how do you know? You know, the first question is, can you know? That's my whole essay with Dr. Bandabhagaya. This is it. You know, can we know everything? Is that even a reasonable like proposition? Why not? Why? Why do you say that? Yeah. Okay. What else? Time is limited. We're immortal. Maybe because the universe is a little bigger than we are. on this bus, you know, it had the Titanic plane. You know, it kept blasting away in Spanish. And, yeah, but these people are falling off the back of the Titanic, and the propeller is like, you know, one pedal on this propeller is bigger than the entire property here, like that. So when you're falling off, it's just like this. You know, it's just insignificant people. You know, they look so tiny. It's just like, you're terrifying to realize how small you are. And that's just one. That's, you know, that's just one little ship in the ocean. What to speak of one planet? What to speak of? You know, just, yeah. So maybe, you know, maybe this we can say. Maybe we can know everything, but it's kind of like it's just from a kind of common sense point of view. It's not really just like a supportable, like a, you know, it's not about a postulate. Axiom, what comes first? Axiom or postulate? Axioms, right? Yeah, axioms, right? No. Axiomatic truth. What is which comes first, you know, in geometry? Axioms or postulates? One of the two. Yeah. And then one is a little bit less intense than the other. Yeah. So anyway, it's not an axiomatic truth that we can know everything. It's up for like a little bit of discussion like that. Yeah. And it's one of the first things Prabhupada talks about. Almost so many lectures you see him talking about that. Can we know everything? Like that. Are you the controller? And usually many people, most people kind of accept, well, yeah, I'm not the controller. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a discussion like this to try and get our ideas clear. And then by the 15th of this month, by then it's going to be published. We're going to have it all printed up, organized, and then have a call for papers like that. And people can write papers, and they can come and present them or something like that. Something like that. And for the publication like that. Maybe do something very nice. And hopefully then Konsitzak, they'll get fired up from their side. Because they, you know, science doesn't include intuition as part of its formal training. Ha! It doesn't even include sense perception. One time, a scientist asked in my tradition, I said, I was psychology. He said, that's not a science. You know? But that's very unfortunate because science is based upon perception, right? And perception, this is a bizarre thing, is not a part of science. Who has the right to formally study perception? Psychologists. They're studied very, you know. For example, you see right here, there's a line, right? Between the black and the white. Yeah, okay. It's a trick question. That's a trick question. Yeah. As a scientist, you have to learn that direct perception. And you have to know your instruments. That's something every scientist would be proud of, like knowing how a mass spectrometer works or a telescope works and stuff. They really get into that. You know? But you're not even using, you don't even know the actual senses you're using, the instruments you're using. So how many sense organs are there behind the lens? That lens there?
Behind
your eyeball lens here. Is there a sense organ behind there? Sense organs? Are they sensitive to sound? Touch? Sight? Maybe just one? There's two, right? Aren't there? What are they called? Rods and?
Cones.
Cones, yeah. And what's the difference? They're both light organs. Do you know the difference? So Mr. Scientist, here you're the scientist. You're all three of these guys are scientists. Now we can harass them. Yeah. I saw the waterfall. Did you really? Are you sure? No, okay, I think the rods respond to black and white, and the cones respond to color. And all these things. Now, for example, the cones are much more intense in the fovea, in the central area of your perceptive field like that. So just naturally, anything which is occurring on the outer tends to go more towards black and white, like perception like that. So the cones, the rods respond to black and white perception and motion. So if I take like two horses going across the finish line, or a football thing, a sports thing where it's like a very dynamic thing, when you color it, it's like interesting. But you put it in black and white, you see it has like this, just like this, wow, this intensity of like motion. That's why, because those are designed to respond to like to motion. And then the fovea, the color ones, the cones respond to color and detail. You know, like that. So Marshall McLuhan, our media expert. Is all epistemology. He points out how media changed society. He said black and white television, the white guys were in control of everything in America, very easy, you know, black and white, you know, lines and this kind of stuff. Whereas the black culture was much more, you know, from Africa with flowers and all this kind of stuff, much more rich. You know. He said he can trace the fact when color televisions came into existence, that's when the cultural revolution and civil rights movement started with black people. Because now they could, like, you know, get their image across to each other and everybody else. Like that. Because in color television, black and white stuff is boring. but all these colors and details, emotions and stuff like that, you know, it's like, you know, it was coming across. You know. Then beyond that, under black and white surfaces, okay, the rods, you know, they're getting stimulated. One rod is getting stimulated less, one is getting stimulated more, because this was in the white area, and this is in the black area, okay? That's it. That's not all. Right at that level, there's a cross wiring, right? So that if one rod is firing more, and it's frequency modulation, not amplitude modulation. It doesn't fire more louder, it just fires more frequently. You know, it gets more pressure, it goes rather than so not amplitude modulation, it's frequency modulation. Incredible how it's working. So if this one's firing more, then it suppresses its neighbor. Yeah. So whatever black and white difference you're seeing here is not the actual black and white difference. Because right at the level of your eyeball, it's already been enhanced. So your eyes are designed to enhance black and white contrast. My God.
So your eyes are already doing what you do on a computer. You can take the image
and
enhance contrast.
And you can't avoid it. I mean, maybe you can get some kind of software in your brain to go back and disenhance the image and realize that actually what it looks like is this. That's just a sense level. And after that, so what are the four defects? These are all areas we could.
Senses, cheating.
Okay. Mistakes.
Illusion.
Now, these again, Monkey and Piggy figured this out. They all fall, appear to fall in a very strict sense. First off, you have inefficient senses. You can't actually see what is black and white. Right? You can't see infrared, you can't see ultraviolet. Bees can see, I think it's ultraviolet. So they see different patterns in flowers than we do. There's some flowers on patterns which are ultraviolet patterns. You can't see them. Bees see them. Yeah. So inefficient senses. So the next level is sensory integration, where that sense data is being put together to make something. Like you get all this information, but then you see a book. Because below the level of your consciousness, it's making you see a book. It's putting together like that. You have no choice. I have experiments like that where you have a cube, drawn on paper, you know, and you can make it flip back and forth. You ever seen this? You know, there's one surface. You can see it as the front, or you can see it as the back. And people, they, you know, you see. You ask the audience, is plane seen our thing like that? Is the cream colored plane is the back or the front? So if you see this as the front, raise your hand. And half the people that other half, not half. It's, you know, it's a different, really different than you. Wow. They say, oh, yeah. Can you make it flip? And all sitting there, and they say, no, no, no. Oh, I got it. You know? But it's really impressive because you can really see how you're seeing two different things. You know? Now, then the big challenge is that can you see it just as lines on paper and not as a cube? And I've never had anybody who can do that. So what if you look at one corner, the guy says, I look at one corner and try to ignore the rest, you can do it that way. You know? But it's almost, we're so conditioned, it's impossible not to see those lines as a cube. Three-dimensional object. So that's the next level, illusion, right? Yeah.
They did an experiment at Oxford recently, talking about how senses, it was some perception experiment, and they put someone in a virtual reality room,
yeah,
and everything was plugged up, and
yeah,
he was in a room, and they made the room he was in change size and shape as he was working through the room.
Yeah.
So all the indicators of size and shape, like how fast something goes through your field of vision, they changed it. And the mind refused to acknowledge the fact that the room was changing size.
Yeah.
It means the brain would continuously correct it to make sure that it was the same size.
Yeah.
And when he came out, he said, no, the room was exactly the same size.
Yeah.
And they completely replicated the change in size of the room.
Again, when I was in college, a similar experiment back. My mentor was President of American Psychological Association, Donald Campbell. And again, he was a genius. He was so far ahead of his time and his colleagues. He had a similar experiment, much more simpler like that, but the same thing. Same thing. But his was social pressure. Not social pressure, but social ambience that can make you see. He had three lines, A, B, and C. Anybody with 20/20 vision can see that B is the shortest line. So you come in for the experiment. There's five other people already sitting down. I'm supposed to be here at like 3 o'clock, and everybody else is already here. I sit down. you know, the experimenter comes in, he says, okay, this is very simple. We want you to tell us which is the shortest line here, like that. And so the first person goes, A. Like that, you know? And it goes down like that, and all of them say A. You know, and finally comes your turn, you say A. So one thing is that, well, maybe just you think you're a fool or something, you didn't understand the instructions or something, you know. So you can see it's B, but you just had a social pressure. And there is that result, that's there. You know? So you take that person out and you say, okay, now I want you to look again and tell me again, now which is the shortest line? And you say, A. You say, okay, I'm going to tell you, the first five people are all actors. And they can be lying or not lying, like that, whatever. Now, so consider that again, which is the shortest line? People go, A. And you say, no, it's B. And then a lot of people, they'll go like, well, my gosh, Mr. Scientist, it is. Wow, I'm sure what's cool, you know. But some people, it's so like, so distressing that you've got to bring them a ruler. And then beyond that, you see them trying to stretch the ruler. It's like, I mean, some people, it's just so like, what's the word, like frightening or something like, and challenging. But he did this experiment. So in science, if you can't depend upon comparison of two linear scalars, how much more simple of an observation can you get? Almost nothing more simple than, but the dot exists or the dot doesn't exist. Yeah. This is the most simple. So science is like, and actually then the word, we say science deals with facts. But where does the word fact come from? Yeah, as in manufacture. What does that mean? Yeah, by what? By hand. It means to make by hand. So fact means that which is created. In Spanish, it's hard to pick up this like difference because in Spanish, it is the same way. The words fact in Spanish is hecho. Hacer is to do, which is a real common word. In English, factor is like an unknown word. But in Spanish, it's just a direct thing. It's just like, you know, the fact is that the hecho is that which is made. You forget a little bit. This is this movie again, science fiction. David Baum was pointing that out. You know, always on. It's in a nice area, actually. You can develop and develop it nicely. What's his name? Religions of Man? Yeah, Houston Smith. It was the most biggest selling book in the history of the world on religions. And now he's changed it to the religions of people because there's a man with sexist like that. But anyway, it was the biggest one in the college textbook on comparisons. So he has another book came out recently about, it's a really fantastic summary review of all of the current thinking on science and religion. And he has his suggestion how they can be combined together, which is not very good. But his review is like, seems really in touch with what's happened within like the last 5 years. You know. So he's describing when he was like head of the Department of Religion at Syracuse University, pretty good. There was a university grant money for every department to bring somebody, you know, one speaker a year for science, biology, physics, chemistry. So, you know, and of course, theology didn't have much money, so they had a committee that would meet and approve it. So he suggested he wanted to bring David Baum, who's a physicist. So everybody else in the committee was kind of like looking at him like, this is, you have almost no money, and one chance you're going to invite a physicist? Why don't you invite a famous theologian? He said, no, I want to do that. I said, okay, it's your money. You know? So it came there, and then he has, because it was a physicist, as a courtesy, he had to go formally to the physics department, make sure it was okay to them to invite somebody. And they said, of course it's okay, and if you need any more money and this kind of stuff, we'll give you anything. Like that, you know? Yeah, okay. So the day that he came there, the biggest hall in the university was packed full. They had people sitting outside in the grass with television monitors to see this whole thing. And the whole first row was the Department of Physics, and all the professors were there, and the heads of the department like that, sitting there. And so David Baum got up. He was, you know, he worked with Einstein. He's maybe dead now, probably passed on now. One of the greatest living physicists historically. So he got up there, and he said he was just simply going in mathematics. And he said he was sure that he lost, you know, the entire audience within 90% of the audience within the first, you know, first five minutes. And after that, the whole rest of them, you know. And then, he said, look, he was kind of looking over, and you could see that a few guys, you know, were like, with the effort, were following him. And they were like, really like, appreciating what he was saying. He was like, talking this bizarre language, and like that. So then the whole thing went on, and finally came down to any questions. But he said, nobody left or anything, because they were all like this to me. It was like, you know, it was amazing to be there. So he asked, and then the head of the Department of Physics, he said, Professor Baum, you give this whole presentation, But this is supposed to be about philosophy, your present today's presentation today was supposed to be on philosophy like that, but it actually seems to be on mathematics and science. And David Baum said, "I make no distinction." He said that was the last question. And then he said, all these guys are like looking over him and smiling and going, "Ah, very clever." Here's somebody who shows that at this level, there is no distinction between philosophy and science, philosophy and mathematics. If you go high enough up, philosophy and science and mathematics are simply philosophy, simply theology. Nothing very reserved about them like that. So it's the same point too about the fact and stuff. Hare Krishna. Hey, Hare Krishna. Do you have like a little summary of your epistemology I could read maybe like in about 15 minutes? The introduction? Yeah, probably gives it a very, isn't it? We use this, I think, is that when lecture we do together. Yeah. Very nice. It gives like a very nice distillery. It was originally given as a lecture at Conway Hall or something like that. Yeah, 1969, a lecture on that. And mostly it's almost all exclusively, it goes into original, it's almost very little ontology. Pratyaksha, Anumana, Shabda, and then Arohapanta, and Avarohapanta, Avatar, Avarohapanta, Arohapanta. It's so nice. Perception, mental speculation, rational, empirical knowledge, rational knowledge, and it divides into ascending, induction, and descending, deduction, and then shabda, hearing. But we go beyond that. Shabda means hearing from the Vedas. We go beyond that. What's after that in our epistemology? Huh? Yeah, or a paramatma, intuition. I actually collect these quotes. I try to do this. There's one where Prabhupada actually kind of makes it very clear that beyond hearing from the Vedas is actually then contact with the super soul. Like that. The super soul is telling you this and that. So, and after that, in our epistemology, direct perception, mental speculation, philosophical speculation, intuition, and then revelation. What happens on the platform of prema, to knowledge? Yeah, because the Christians deal with this. Different theological traditions, they also figure this out. Experiences. Yeah. For example, somebody's playing ping pong. Can you play ping pong? No? Can you play ping pong? Ever play? It's fun, actually. Fun. But it's a very fast game, like that. So do you know what's happening? But your knowledge is not separate from your activity. You can't really separate the two. At that point, there's just no question about knowledge being separate from the activities. This is so fast. It's just at that point, jnana and bhakti merge. To do is to know, and to know is to do. Like that. There's just no distinction at that point. Because otherwise, knowledge is a kind of demoniac thing. I know. I have this independent knowledge potency. That I can know independently. And Bishop Berkeley, his point is the same point, chapter 13. But Berkeley said there's three things. There's the material world, there's us, and God. And our ultimate existence is to be known by God. That's our ultimate existence, is to be known by God, to act in such a way. Bright guy. That's exactly what that chapter is talking about. Maybe got it from somebody from the Vedas, indirectly from different sources, but coming from a lot of these German, was it kind of German philosophers. I had contact with the Vedas.
Same Berkeley was the
city?
The university, like not Berkeley.
I think so, yeah. He was also a theologian. And the communists wanted to change the name of the city. I don't know. Because he was a theologian and stuff. That's fine. Berkeley, it's not. But that's what it is. He was it's very nice. It's a very clear thing. There's a knower of the field, and there's a knower of the knower of the field. And this is where it's kind of, it's like, wow. So because our existence is only based upon being known by Krishna. So anyway, the idea is to, I think part of the idea is, and it's going to be hard though, maybe we can get on the phone to Miguel and talk with him a little bit about this and stuff like that, you know, and write some papers, send them back and forth and see if, you know, in these next few days like that. Because I get probably, it's almost like this, almost like starting a whole series of symposium, an annual symposium almost, to bring up these points like that. Have you seen some Western philosophers? You've seen these, right? Western philosophers? Western philosophers, how they deal with these things? Like, how do they deal with epistemology, Western philosophers? Is it very pleasant to read their works?
It's some kind of pleasure because it all fits together.
Oh, yeah? Wow.
It hits a lot. Like, I remember reading Hume.
Yeah?
It was actually a lot of fun because he just takes everything and he, by questioning, he just dismantles everything. You know, he says, you say there's a soul, and yet, how do you know that there's a soul?
So he's using Socratic method.
Mm-hmm.
Or the didactic? Didactic means questioning. Yeah, means questions and answers. Yeah. Using analytical.
And he just kind of, he's pulling apart everything.
Yeah.
Saying, I have perceptions here, and feelings, and intuition.
Yeah.
It's like bundles of thoughts, and bundles of feelings, and bundles of ideas, and bundles of concepts, but I find nothing called the soul inside. And there's no self, no person. It's just thoughts and bundles of
But who's aware of all these things?
Yeah.
That's the point. That's if he doesn't cover that point.
No, I mean that's the. I ask my students this in class. I said, how would someone studying the Upanishad respond to Hume?
Yeah.
Why can he not see these things?
Yeah.
Because he is the seer, not it's not what is being seen.
Yeah.
It's like you look all over your body, you can't see where my eyes.
Are. Yeah. It's a common phrase that the eye cannot see itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's your reflection. It's a reflection. So Buddhism has come back from the mind, the manas to buddhi, the intelligence. The Buddhist phrase is, look at life 1 inch from behind your eyeballs. So you're always conscious of your eyes looking. And try to think twice before you do anything. It's kind of that's all that Buddha is saying pretty much is just don't it's Buddha yoga. Just don't be a gross fool absorbing central reactions. Just stop and be a little detached from everything. Which is hard to maintain that without, Mayi Sarvani Bhutani. No, that's a good one. Mayi Sarvani Karmani 330. First place says, do it for me. So that's the first, without that, doing it for Krishna, it's hard to maintain this neutral position, of being detached from matter, but not being attached to Krishna. Okay. It's a secret. secret meeting here. Secret class, hey. Secret class, hey. So it's kind of like an overview of some of the things we're treating, and but a lot of these things. One time, I saw one book was called Sociobiology by this guy named Wilson from Harvard. It's kind of popular. It was about how there's this altruistic gene. Because the best thing is the survival of the fittest, right? Everybody kills everybody else, and whoever survives, that's why evolution goes on, because they're better than everybody else. Yeah. But then this thing was noted, but we see altruistic behavior, people helping each other in society and animals, and so how can this exist? It has a convoluted type thing, how it's helping you defeat others. So I was looking at the book, and it was going through the guy's library, and it was Bhaktivedanta Institute, and there's all these pictures of animals fighting for food and sex and shelter. And in the book it was just saturated with cigarette smoke. And if somebody was sitting there reading it, and I was really that's the only way it would actually make any sense. Because it's one or the other. Either you're going to help people How are you going to be like, you know, egoistic and help people? As soon as you help them, they're going to be better off than you are. They're going to be able to eat your children or whatever it is, or, you know, kill your spouse or something, you know. So the only thing is this pure brute, you know, annihilation of others, you know, that competition. But that's why, like, myself, a lot of times, you start going through these things, it's just only something actually somebody could generate by keeping themselves from any kind of broader intelligence. As soon as you get into it, now you get caught in the details and stuff like that. You know? Marshall McLuhan said, a technician is somebody who never makes the smallest mistake as he proceeds towards the grand illusion. Like that. So they become these technical philosophers and stuff. Here's the mind-brain problem. That seems like the most ridiculous, stupid, you know, thing on earth. It's like the, you know, the touch skin problem. I mean, everybody's just touching their skin, and there's a sense organ, like the light eye problem, right? The picture eye problem. What's the problem? It's the mind, the brain. The mind is what you experience directly, you know, and the brain is what you experience directly, indirectly, you know, like that and stuff. Maybe it's a little bit more thing. It's just, if you can't keep like a concept bigger than like, you know, three moving parts together at one time, you could kind of, you know, go around and never figure out it's the same thing or something like that. That was my experience. And a lot of this stuff is just, it's stupid. And they'll go on arguing with you forever. They'll bring up this technical thing, that technical thing. And in the end, they just won't. That's kind of one thing, is that some people just won't understand. You know, basically, probably also basically, unless they get for Sodom, you know. Basically, it makes you good. Now we're coming to this point when you give the whole project up. As Prabhupada's saying, without taking prasadam, you know, and stuff, they haven't got sufficient intelligence. So give them prasadam before the program, during the program, afterwards, and then you get, you know, intelligent enough to understand it for some time. But there are some people, like we're talking about, like Bishop Barclay and others like that, you know, who may be able to understand. And it's you know, I don't know.
With him, he was so much a skeptic that he was refusing even, I'm about to speak of Shabda, but he was refusing Anuman and saying that inference itself is baseless. All you have is projection. And that, from that we get this famous question of, you know, how do you know that the sun will rise tomorrow?
Yeah.
And it's, okay, it's risen every single day for the last 1 year, but
yeah.
It would be that tomorrow just doesn't rise, because there's nothing, no sense perception which can help you make the jump, even the
aroha
that he will not accept.
Yeah, but even the smallest integration of perception is going to require no speculation.
Yeah, I mean, that the arguments you're giving in terms of the second stage of the perception and the integration.
Yeah.
Very much.
So it's the perception, you know, integration, which is where the illusions occur. You see a snake for a rope. Okay, now information is getting to my eyes properly, to my frequency. I'm putting together, it's a book. But then I make a cognitive mistake. 1 + 1 + 1 = 3. You know, so the cognitive level, and I make mistakes. You know, cognition, like that. That's the example we get. Okay, proper perception, proper integration, proper calculation, but ill-motivated. I don't want to. You know. So this thing fall like in a very systematic description. I think the more you go through these things, it's just like, this is so like intelligent and stuff like that. You know? Many times too, very simple. I mean, not like very, doesn't get so complicated, you know? Overly intelligent, you know, like that. It's reasonable and actually develop very broad intelligence. You know? Put it together in an integrated fashion in a super, super powerful effect. It's like, again, like Ayurveda. You might understand how to cook food properly and eat properly. It's more powerful than almost any medicine. You know? Very powerful. Anybody else? A lot of philosophers. Descartes, almost everybody talks about epistemology. Descartes was cogito ergo sum. He came back to the same thing. Of just, you know, observing the fire. I'm different than the fire. I'm different than the sensual perception. Oh, I think, therefore I am. Cogito ergo sum. I am. I think, therefore I am. But ours is God, even, because ours goes even beyond. Kant's epistemology? Kant's position.
I just remember his anecdote and prejudice. moral system.
His idea was only the Buddha is real. There are fundamental, irreducible patterns that exist, which just integrate things in a certain way. You know, like that. The material world is not real. The sensuous world is not real. He's the exact opposite of human. This is why, too, our particular American philosophy comes to the British, and like that, and the Germans have a different view. Exactly different. So because of Kant, their ideas, they don't have all this basis, trust and sense perception. Like that. And then beyond that, they also don't trust the thoughts as being final, because the thoughts are being formed upon the attitudes, the deep, what Buddhism calls the jnanas, these very deep, fundamental, integrative perspectives. Like that. For example, cohesion. Bhagavatam talks about that. The fact that things can be seen as a group. Grouping, set theory, right? Let's see, we'll go back to like that. There is this like thing to see, well, this exists, groups, no. Your mind makes things, your mind is this thing to see things in groups. Like that, to make that a hundi, make that a drum, to make that a microphone stand. Your mind just has these tendencies. And these are very, very great introspective people. And so that was, I think, his idea as I understood it. But this is, again, this is like, I mean, this is where like, cross-cultural discussion and stuff like that, getting these discussions going and stuff, you know, and go ongoing. And a lot of devotees in ISKCON probably, you know, qualified to like get into these and talk about them. And it's a nice area. You know, Hridayananda Maharaj kind of poo-poos epistemology, moves right on like that. But to me, it's very, probably deals with almost every single one of Prabhupada's books starts with this. How do we know? What is the basis? And after that, he goes into the content. Almost always he starts with parampara. So Upadesha Mrita starts with parampara. So he starts with this other thing, the same thing. Bhagavad Gita. The first one Western philosopher, sociologist from Texas told me, he said, I make some presentation, you better. He said, yes, it's good. He said, but what you better emphasize this epistemology thing more. That A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami is not presenting what he thinks. He says he's so addicted, and Western people are so addicted to that thing, they just don't even think there's any possibility. But he's not presenting what he thinks. That's just the basis of modern understanding. Some perception and a lot of speculation. It's cheaper, costs less, requires less work. You know. Yeah. So, you know, anybody else? I don't know. Maybe Miguel. Because other people are going to see how they organize. Maybe we want somebody. Maybe we want like a contrast. You know, contrast, and then I don't know if we're going to get to. Maybe tomorrow night we can stop now. maybe tomorrow night then we can discuss like the sandarbhas a little bit. I've always had giving presentations simultaneously. I've never been able to hear the discussions of the sandarbhas. Is that? It'd be nice, Dr. Godhead article, wouldn't it? Like a nice little summary of the sandarbhas. Very nice. Very. Nice. Yeah. Are they back to Godhead?
Yes. It was like a 4-6-part series.
But they were more depth, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always think of this one where it goes over the content of all six, and then because probably is a little bit very super brief, in between like that. Usually it's enough. He still discusses this, and like that. And so basically they're in, we call it in English, they're little like essays, right? Anucheda? It's like a little essay on one topic. Yeah. And so, at what point, at a certain size, it must probably ceases to be an anucheda and become something else, right? I think it's to a certain size.
In Jiva Goswami, the sizes are so very, sometimes an anucheda is just a paragraph.
Yeah.
Sometimes it goes on to seven.
What does the word mean? Anu is after. Anucheda. Yeah. That's good, because in Basya. Essays.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more than one paragraph. Huh?
Yeah.
Hard to find English thinking of paragraph. One big author is
now.
Yeah.
There, but the danda doesn't really stopping point is. Mm-hmm. It kind of marks the stopping point of thought or whatever. Because this used to throw me off a lot.
Wow.
Translate. It was kind of like, I would think, oh, okay, now we're done. Mm-hmm. But this, the whole thing would make sense. And I realized, well, the verb, there's several verbs here, and I have to divide it further. But they place the dunda, it's just kind of, okay, this is a place you should take a breath and pause, because you just completed something.
Wow.
Not so grammatically. There's no, basically no punctuation. Possible.
Yeah.
You know, grammatically speaking, there must be a period here, there must be a comma. There's nothing that can be punctuation.
So it's almost it's very difficult to understand independent of a verbal explanation and a verbal presentation. You have to hear the person present it. Whereas in English, it's done. You go back in English, probably you find the same thing in early English, and different things like that. At a certain point, the sentence came in as a communication form, the paragraph came in as a communication form. And, you know, probably going to discover, like, I don't know, in Greek or not, they have sentences or not. Because poetry does that too, right? Poetry gives you, like, this, you know, groupings. You know, gives you, like, a break like that. Pada. You know. You get things like, one pada? No, I'm a pada. What's it called? Usually there's four padas though, and two of those make one something. Sarvadharma paricca ja mamikam jyonam bhaja. Usually those actually use. Yeah, the two things combine together and there's a line. There's a danda. After two of them there's a danda. After two padas there's a danda. Yeah. But how to form the ideas and stuff. And how to put them in groups and stuff like that. I'm going to go for a little walk now. Okay, down to the river. Okay, so Papa, keep going. Tomorrow. Well, tomorrow, we'll have a program. Okay, you can present the program tomorrow night.
Maharaj, the theater is in the news.
Oh, yeah?
And we did say 1 million.
Take pictures. That was so strange at the very last. It looked like the last. I mean, you couldn't have had a better spot. We decided to be the last.
This is before that happened, it's before the beginning.
What is here? What was here?
$25,000.